And I think Nollywood, to me, historically, has been very queer because the experience of queerness is being forced to create something outside of mainstream.
Podcast Burkhülshoff Center for Literature.
Welcome to Queer Circles, the podcast series which aims to break through Western narrative of queerness and shed light on queer histories and cultural practices from Nigeria and beyond. Queer Circles is a collaboration between Obodo, a youth-led LGBTQ organization in Nigeria, and Burkhülshoff Center for Literature in Germany. The project seeks to make different expressions of queerness visible and explore the intersections of queer activism with literature, art, film, and science. I am your host, Matthew Blaze, and I am here today with Nosa, a filmmaker and artist, and also Malachi, a culture journalist and writer. And we'll be discussing queering pop culture and film in Nigeria. I'm so excited to be sharing this space with both of you today.
Same.
And thank you for having us.
I'll just quickly ask you both to introduce yourselves and also your work. Nosa, you want to go first?
Sure. My name is Nosa. Like you said, I'm an artist and a filmmaker. My work generally explores narratives through absurdism and experimenting with boundaries and just following wherever my curiosity goes. And yeah, that is me. Over to Malachi.
Okay. Hi, I'm Malachi. I am a culture writer at Zikoko. There I get to talk about queer issues in the most, how will I put it? I don't want to say friendly, but in the most joyful way, I guess. I cover a whole lot of niche interest stories, like, oh, if you're an anime nerd and you know something that will interest them, I'll be there to write about it. I like to think that in this life I can manage like an artist into like proper stardom in this life. So, you know, I'm waiting for that to happen. I'm still discovering all the things I'd like to write about, but you know, culture writer sort of fits everything I want.
That is such a perfect opening. And yeah, thank you so much, Malachi. Moving on, we asked all our guests to come with a favorite queer quote or a queer quote that they like. In doing this, we are trying to get into deeper understanding of their own concept of queerness. I mean, how they conceptualize queerness for themselves. So we start with you, Malachi. Is there a text? A quote that you have with you here today?
Yes, I do. I have one, but it's more of a quote from a book, from my personal Bible, Vagabond. Oh. Yeah. So this is from There Is Love at Home, and it goes, "A thing being forbidden did not make it extinct. That, in fact, bans only created black markets." Do you want me to talk about it?
How does this quote relate to your queerness? Because I find it very interesting, especially in relation to criminalization and how criminalization and resilience, how despite being criminalized, there's still a way.
I don't want to say that I like the quote or I think of it in relation to my queerness or queerness in general from like an angle of criminalization. I mean, yes, that is part of it, but it's more of a like, just because you refuse to see something, just because you look at me when I'm outside and you see like nothing more than a woman, a femme presenting person somewhat, you see a first daughter or something like that, does not mean that like that's who I am. Just because you've banned something from existence, just because you say, oh, this does not exist in our society, does not mean that it just ceased. Like, all you have done is created this avenue for people to be themselves in a space that is different from like the ones that like other people can just... I don't know if I'm making sense. I'm already
making sense. I think you're making
sense.
But
yeah, that's...
Yeah, and over to you, Nosa.
Yeah, I really like that quote, and it's kind of similar to mine. My quote is kind of similar to Malachi's quote. Mine is from Under the Udala Tree by Chinono Oparanta. And the quote says, "If you set off on a witch hunt, you will find a witch. When you find her, she will be dressed like any other person, but to you her skin will glow in stripes of white and black. You will see her broom and you will hear her witch cry and you will feel the effects of her spells on you. No matter how unlike a witch she is, there she will be a witch before your eyes." And the quote is basically about scapegoating in a way, because I feel like one thing I read a long time ago was how in an effort to distract citizens of a country from their actual problems, they create things that are not problems, like homophobia, for example. Mm. It's like that's the reason the economy is bad, because queer people exist, so not because like the government is mismanaging money. Anyway, so that is my quote.
Mm. I like that.
I mean, yeah, and I also find the both quotes similar.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, coming from my own perspective, in terms of government censorship and also subjugation, and yet people resist in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
So just coming from my own angle. I will move to you, Malachi, with my first question.
Okay.
Which is around pop culture generally. We know the power of Gen Zs. I'm also a Gen Z. I realized that some time ago.
Same.
Yeah, and also, Malachi, you work in the media space here in Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that the Nigerian media spaces are very, very homophobic and very transphobic, I'm just wondering, how did you find yourself in Zikoko? And what really came into your mind to just start working on queer content?
I don't know how to start my journey, as in how I got to Zikoko, but I guess I've like always wanted to write. And at first I came in there as an intern to create memes for like the meme site. And then I wanted to write about stuff. And one thing I realized is that, like, I don't know if this cannot maybe consider outing, but there were a whole lot of queer people in. And I'm like, oh, okay. There was also, you know, language where already when you join the company, people are asking you, oh, what are your pronouns? I just want to make sure I get it right and stuff. And they can see a different name on the bank account that you sent to them and the name that you're using. And they're like, no questions asked. Like, okay, this is who you are, I guess. So that just from the start made me realize, well, if I tell these people that I want to write about a 12 type of lesbians you meet at a Lagos bar, they're going to allow me to do that. You know, the more I pitched that, the more like, and there were also people on the team writing a whole lot of queer stories. There was the Love Live writers writing Love Live of like queer women, queer men, non-binary people. There was like this one article Daniel wrote about abuse in like gay men, with boys, something that is barely talked about, you know, and stuff like
and
that.
And I feel like it's the first time something like that is happening.
It was so cool, and I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. And you know, I went from pitching, oh, how do you find money on the floor articles, which I absolutely love to write, to like maybe I would just pitch like two articles about like this funny thing, this funny queer articles, and they'd be like, yeah, okay, go for it, write it. And I don't, that was just it. It became a thing, and really I did cool. Stop.
Yeah. That's such an interesting story. How you just found community.
Mm-hmm. I won't say found community per se, because like it's still work. I was allowed to write about this stuff. I don't think it was a community thing per se. Like not shade or anything. It's just, you know,
a safe space.
Yeah, it was work. Exactly.
Work safe space.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also just to add this other question to you also cover so much around young people, especially Gen Zs. which I am part of, right? And a lot of people in this like time think Gen Z is at the future when it comes to queer liberation, that they have the ability and the power to do it. Since you also cover this area, what do you think about that?
So because I get to do, I get to talk a lot to, younger Gen Z people, especially when we're doing interviews, we have this, do I call it a segment of stuff? But it's like, it's called X Nigerian. So, sometimes you have a question about how X queer Nigerians are managing, living at home and being out or something like that. So you get to like hear people's opinion. And one thing I would like to say is that I want to say that Gen Z could be like willing to fight for liberation, but there's this softness to how like they go about it that I think the generation before them it has kept them going for like longer. And Gen Z can be very fickle. Like, they know that they want like a future that is better for themselves, yeah. But like, there's a lot of fear that they also have. On like, if, even just when they are talking about like their struggles, you can see that like there's a way I've seen older people just go after things like, I want this change. There's hesitation with Gen Z. It's just based off like my conversation with like a lot of them. So I want to say yes, because they are going to have to do it. Like, we're going to have to do it eventually. We are the only ones left willing. So, but I think it will take longer than people think, just because of that.
I mean, and Gen Z, as we go older, and then there will be another Gen something.
I mean, there's already
Gen
X, yeah,
Gen Alpha.
Gen Alpha, and they are so... Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't know, but I honestly do not believe that Gen Z's will get us the queer liberation we actually want.
What? You don't have faith in your people.
I don't have faith in Gen Z's.
Wow.
I think Gen Z's are just... they are not so, so different from millennials.
No, they are just really younger, and they have more to lose.
Yeah, Gen Z's are very...
They are very... That's because they are highly dependent on, like, a whole lot of their... Like, how old is... I don't... Even the oldest Gen Z is still... Like, they're very... Like, I don't know how to explain it, but not enough of people have, like, had those insane struggles that you've seen the older queer people have. Like, they have it, yes. But, like, physically, I don't know how to explain it. It's not that they will not be able to push for, like, liberation and stuff. They'll just be slower than you think, is all I'm saying.
Interesting.
Okay. I mean, and also the whole shared factor is fear. I've seen like fear in millennials, fear in Gen Z's. Like, it's just fear and people passing on fear. Yeah. I hope we don't pass on this fear to the next.
They don't even have it.
I don't know. I mean, moving on to you, Nosa. You are very much in the film making space here in Nigeria. I wouldn't say you are into Nollywood. So for those who do not know, Nollywood is the third biggest film industry in the world after Hollywood.
After Bollywood.
So Hollywood is the biggest,
the number
one. Number one, Hollywood, Bollywood, and then Nollywood. And Nosa, since you are in this industry, I want you to take us through how queerness is viewed in Nigeria through films. Especially in Nollywood. How do these people approach the subject queerness?
Okay. Can I start with the definition of queer, if that's fine?
Please go on, okay. Please.
Because I think that's very like integral to Nollywood. Queer is traditionally described as something strange, and eventually it became a slur for queer, like non CIS straight people, and then now it's co-opted. And I think Nollywood, to me, historically has been very queer, because the experience of queerness is being forced to create something outside of mainstream. And that's what you mentioned about, like, in the quote about banning something, creating another avenue. Nollywood films were made very like guerrilla style. They shoot it in one camera in like maybe 2 days, then release the film in like 1 week or something like that. And within that, they told stories that you didn't see in mainstream films. And some of those stories were queer, but the way queerness was shown was in a villainizing way, or in a way that it was teaching you a moral that, like, okay, for example, these two women are lesbians because one of them's father didn't let her leave the house at all, and she had to turn to her best friend, and that's how she became a lesbian.
Kizai.
Go on. I remember that was actually the first queer movie I ever watched. I think I was around 9. It was when I was living in Ikeja. And I remember watching that film and the trajectory of it. It was just very fascinating. I was like, wow, okay, two women are making out. Okay, but it's bad, but interesting. But I think now we have a lot of, not a lot, but we have a couple of queer Nigerian films that are being made. Okay. And it's still made in a queer way, in the sense that it can't particularly be shown in theaters, for example. So people have to watch them on like YouTube, Vimeo, independent film festivals, because that's the only way you have access to it, because, well, queerness is illegal in Nigeria. Yeah.
Mm. Do you want to add to that, Malakai?
No, I'm just now thinking about it. I never thought about it like that, Yeah, that's why it's not being shown everywhere else, because this is some sort of other. I used to fight filmmakers in my head, like, oh, why did you make this? And then nobody else is getting to see it. Because I have this rapt reality within, like, my own community where, you know, being us is like, it's okay. Like, mm-hmm. Everybody in my... And then when they're like, oh, yeah, they can't show this in the cinema, I'm like, why? Why not? Forgetting that, oh yeah, that's not the actual
also censorship.
The censorship
can be, yeah.
And filmmaking is a very... People see this much of filmmaking. They don't see the pre-production. They don't see the post-production. They don't see having to put it out in the market and get people to actually purchase it and show it in places. So I get why you would have that sentiment, like, why are you not showing it on Netflix? Or
I think those are very, very what was this word called? Those are very important factors, right? I mean, you don't want to produce a film that people won't be able to see due to censorship and blah blah blah. But there's also the conscious effort of Nollywood to demonize queer people.
I think in their efforts to demonize it in a strange way, I think I've mentioned this before, they ended up archiving queerness in Nigeria, because they ended up showing, oh, they were queer people here. We're going to say to God bleed the glory at the end of this film and say, like, oh yeah, they're not... They didn't get married. Maybe one married a man. To God be the glory. But at the end of the day, that filmmaker archived the fact that in 1998, for example, they were queer women in Nigeria. And for some people, like, they watched that and they were like, yeah, I'm not going to be queer because it's bad. And, like, they try to suppress their own, like, experiences. But other people like me remember it and like, yeah, okay, I actually want to make a queer movie where it's not bad.
To just counter that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, I mean, film is also a reflection of time. And I do believe that some of these filmmakers too, they saw these things somewhere or like saw like this happenings around them, and due to religion, they just had to find a way to demonize it. And also, they can also make money from demonizing people like this. And yeah, I believe a lot of them just like took that path, which is very homophobic and also very transphobic
too. And Hollywood used to do that too. Yeah, there is this Instagram page, I can't remember the name, but I'll send it to you after. And they show like excerpts from films, like from like 1930s till now, where you had like queer characters. And because of the time or what was happening then, the directors would suppress it in some way so that it's not like obvious. Yes. But Hollywood was a very like queer industry. So again, the only way they could really show these things was by showing it in a bad way. So I'm not saying all of them meant good, but they were just archiving. But a lot of them at the end of the day just ended up showing it the way that they had the access to.
Yeah. Malachi, you work so much with memes too. And there's this Instagram page online called Nolly Babes.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is to rewrite this homophobic narrative by Nollywood. So you all should check them out on Instagram. They are called Nolly Babes. And they just rewrite stories that were told in misogynistic, homophobic or transphobic ways. They give them better endings. And this page is followed by a lot of young people. What impact do you think mediums like that, using that approach, has on our society?
Using memes.
Using memes and rewriting a lot of these stories. What impact does it have on the pop culture?
I don't think it actually they actually rewrite the stories per se, because the people who follow their content, like I watch a whole lot of their videos and look at the memes they make on Instagram, and it's like, oh, if they can take our own stories and bend them the way they want to bend it, I guess we can do the same with theirs. Because I have seen some of those scenes and I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is not what happened, but I'm glad that we are interpreting it like this anyways, because like, this is better overall to me, sure, because you know. Anyways, how I think it will work, or how I think like this will eventually show up, is just like exactly what Nosa said. They will be in a way archiving like some of this content for other people to come and see. So I think that what Young Nollywood does now is that they sort of take, you know, pictures from the stills from these movies and turn them into memes, you know, with funny, sometimes queer relating type of quotes and stuff, and people just, you know, young people, they like it, their sense of humor is sort of broken, so they, you know, they take and share these pictures, and it sort of serves as a way for them to like document these movies. Maybe you might not, you didn't get to watch it when it was premiered and stuff like that, but you get to see, you get to like see these images and realize, yeah, we exist and this was created in that time. So I do think it would be important, you know, it would be important for us, for all these memes, all this is to be created by these people.
I get that point of memes serving this archival purpose in homophobic like narrative or situation, but also like fear that imagine these memes serving as references, and then people go out to research on these movies. For instance, a young queer person who is still struggling with themselves, and they watch like films like this, and then I don't know, it might not have a great impact in their lives. That's why the way I see it is rewriting, I mean, Nollywood, Nolly Babes and Young Nolly Online, they are kind of giving these stories new definitions or meaning. So when you as a young person just see the meme, like Nage the Rain, oh yes, Nage the Rain. So it's a whole different like understanding of this film, and then when you go into it, like, okay.
Do you want to go?
I think you said something, like when you started your sentence, you said that those young Nollywood babes, they do the same thing that Nollywood films did to queer people in real society. So they changed the narrative of their own existences, and then in response, I guess, these like pages are changing, like kind of like, oh well, I can do it too.
Yeah.
Archiving in their own ways. And I think that's a reflection of our generation. I don't think we're kind of in the same generation, but not exactly. I mean, like yeah. a middle ground area.
Yeah.
So the same way those films were a reflection of that generation and how they existed in the Nigerian society, these pages are like a reflection of how Nigerians
In this age existed.
I think so, like how we, like you said, how we like to make fun of like things. So it's like, I think the Nolly Babes pages, for example, I don't think they're fully being serious sometimes. They're like, it's like an inside joke, you get what that's we're all laughing at it. And then under the, someone will ask, oh, what's the name of this film, and they'll be like, oh, Domitila Part 1 and 2. But, yeah.
Yeah, and also want to just ask, what purpose does film have in changing pop culture here in Nigeria? And also, going further, that question is for you, Nosa. And also, going further, right, when we say pop culture in Nigeria, what does that mean?
Do you want to answer your question first?
Okay, I think we should go like this, Malachi.
Okay, let's hear what pop culture means.
Pop culture in Nigeria, that's too hard to limit. Like, I don't think you can pin per se what counts as like pop culture in Nigeria, because we have so much. Fuck, the government is pop culture in Nigeria, to be honest. Like, anything that causes Nigerians to like, should I say, sit back, laugh, especially, it's pop culture. That's the way I like to think about it. Like, if it's something Nigerians are enjoying, they've considered it part of like you could see just a group of Nigerians maybe laughing about an inside joke that is a baby or something like that. Mm. But the next thing you know, it's something everybody and their daddies are saying. So it's whatever just causes Nigerians to like, I don't know, laugh. That's the way I see pop culture.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So, I mean, Nosa, what impact does a film, especially like the work that you do, making queer film in a place where queerness is criminalized, what impact does that have on queer culture? On pop culture, I mean.
Where do I begin? So, in the beginning of my filmmaking journey, I really wanted to... My tagline was that I'm making films for queer people that have optimistic outlooks. So, I didn't want a... Like what you said about like a young person going to watch an old Nollywood film and then finding out like, oh, well, it ends with us finding out that queerness is supposed to be bad.
Yeah.
I wanted to make films that like young, particularly young, even old queer people watch, and they're not even thinking about homophobia. Like, it's at the end, they're like, oh, wait, these are people in Lagos, Nigeria. And like, there's no mention of homophobia. There's no mention of like being disowned by their family. It's just an escape. And I think it's important to make films, literature like that, that shows queer people living without homophobia, whether it's real to somebody's reality or not. Because I feel like if people don't create these worlds, then it's hard for them to exist. Like, they can't exist if people don't make them. So with Ixara, that was basically the point to...
Yeah, talk about your two films.
Ixara is a film about two women from different standpoints of, I would say, politics, who are brought together by an interview and end up falling in love, long story short. And I think Malachi.
Oh, obsessed.
And yeah, so that's Ixara. And it showed at X16 Film Festival. I also had my other film, Camilla, which is the story of an individual who has an intense relationship with another woman, and it ends in
tears.
Tears, blood. No. But Camilla came from a book from like the 1800s. Mm. And it's actually about a lesbian vampire. And the first vampire in literature is actually Camilla, like documented literature. But everybody knows Dracula, but people barely know Camilla. And so I wanted to play with the concept of like time, especially in Benin, because I had access to very old architecture there, and just the history of an ancient city as well. So I got to put that together with this very old story and create something queer in Nigeria. Yeah.
That's such an interesting background, and I never knew about the Camilla being the first
vampire in literature, like, oh, the first.
So you actually rewrote the story
for Camilla to be an Edo vampire. Yeah. Yes,
Malachi. Before I move to my last question, I want to ask. As a writer who obviously writes in a place where it's criminal to do your kind of writing, 14 years. What stories do you choose to focus on?
So I guess I choose to focus on like queer joy, in the sense of like, there will be people documenting the harshness and the toughness. And there are people at the time, even on the team, at the same time, talking about like harsh. Yeah, this is the thing that goes on. And I was like, that's great and all, but I would like to read funny stuff in that BuzzFeed writes, but for like a Nigerian, like for a more Nigerian audience. Like only a Nigerian will get away with saying, oh, yeah. Well, I don't even want to say get away. It's just so particular to write an article. I think I'd mentioned this before, like the 12 lesbians you meet at the bar, or like in South, for example, because that's where you go and you meet your ex and your ex's ex's ex.
Where is South? Just like...
I don't know why I'm there whenever I'm there, but like, you find yourself there.
South is this queer-friendly spot.
Mm-hmm. And I think one reason I say South spot is queer-friendly is because a lot of spaces, like, even Hard Rock now, you go there and they want you to pay for a table, a booth, dress a certain way. But South, you can literally just come in there and
dance. So queerness means fucking class.
Yeah. In a way. And yeah. South was just like everybody and anybody.
We're all the same. Not the same. I mean, we're all something.
Our uniqueness, it's fine. Unique.
Even with like the language, While I was there, I mean, other people did try to do that, but it was very deliberate for me not to write articles and be like, oh, it's your girlfriend. Let's say you are chilling on a Saturday with your girlfriend, and I just change it to partner, you know, instead of using she, I find a way to make it, you know, they, since it's like, it's not the most neutral, but like everybody understands that it's a neutral pronoun situation. So it was a whole lot of like changing the language. You'd see people in the comment section being like, who be they? Like, nah, 10 people be that. And I'm like, see my G, complain, but you will see it tomorrow, you will see it next tomorrow, until it becomes normal for you, until you even start using it and you're like, when did this one like start? But like that was it for me. It was, I wanted like 16-year-olds to like go to Zikoko and be able to see listicles about what it is like, and looking for like the perfect pronoun to use as a non-binary person, and to use like Nigerian slangs and Nigerian, how will I put it? Just in a very Nigerian manner. I wanted like people to be able to go there and relate to like the funny, interesting, not even just funny, but just like softness. Mm-hmm. I wanted like during Pride Month, I didn't want to, I knew other people would cover stories about, oh, this is how Pride Month usually goes for me, or these are my struggles as a this person in Nigeria. And I wanted
to focus on
that. I just to be like, oh, here's how you can support your queer friend. And just funny things like, send them money. Did you see number one? Send them money again. You know, just silly things like that. So yes, for me, it was all about like documenting the joys against everything else.
I mean, Nosa, what do you also choose to focus on in your work?
Honestly, like I said before, I was very focused on creating like worlds where queer people were not they were not criminalized. It was just normal. But now, honestly, wherever my curiosity goes, I'm like, let's try and look at that. Let's see what will happen with that. So, but I also try but I'm not driven to follow like tropes. For example, but I'm not interested in like stories about queer people, in writing stories about queer people being like pushed away by their family. Mm-hmm. Because like it's just not where my mind is. Maybe in the future it can come there again, but that's not where my curiosity is right now. But I'm very excited about all the queer stories that are coming out of Nigeria, because there are a couple that have come out and that will come out, and that will not be made by me, that have been made by other people. And that makes me very excited, because it feels more normalized. And I think that's what's important, that we get to a point in the future where, I know this is a dream, but where you have in UNILAG a class where they are teaching about reading subtext in queer Nigerian films. Oof. Or just exploring like films in Nigeria with queer characters, and it's not like,
I mean, you just like got to the next question I was about to ask. So how do you, what's the queer future for you, queer future in films?
I see it as a lack of despite, like a stories where like people are queer, but it's not like, oh, they are doing this despite the fact that they are queer. They're queer and they're doing this. That's where I see the future. And just, and I want that to reflect the times of the Nigerian future, where queer people can exist without despite. Like, somebody can be an openly gay man at, I don't know, a bank, and people will not be like, oh yeah, he's an openly gay man in Nigeria, despite the fact it's criminalized. So, I know it's a very far hope, but that's my hope, that cinema is reflecting a better Nigeria.
Awesome. Malachi, hope for the future as a queer journalist, as a queer culture journalist?
My hope is that like more people try to document too, because there's so many people doing it, but like there will never be enough, just because... Even when you try, there's people trying to like destroy that. So even in like the spaces, they don't want it to happen, that, oh, you're writing all this stuff. My hope is that, you know, people don't have to fight so much to talk about things like this. It's just normal. I think normal is even like begging for too much. It's just like, necessary in the sense that, like, oh, the pretentious way that people are like, oh, let's not be woke, so we have to talk about this stuff. They don't want to, but they kind of have to, because it has now become like a norm, if that makes sense, so to say. So that's just it, that there are more people documenting stuff. There are more people talking about stuff unapologetically.
Such a beautiful future. And to wrap up this episode, I'd like to ask each of you to recommend 3 queer films or books that you think people, our viewers from different parts of the world, should watch or read. So I will start with you, Malachi. Can recommend 3 books or 3 films, or mix them up, whichever you like.
Can I just recommend like random, like a book, a film, and maybe it's a song or something?
Yeah, please, go on.
Okay, so I think if queer film, because Ixora was the last one I saw, it was truly brilliant. I'm going to recommend Ixora. Great. I don't know where you guys are going to find it. Beg Nosa.
We're working on it.
Yeah. Then for a book, I cannot preach about Vagabonds enough. Mm. Like, would you read it today? It's something new. Tomorrow, Vagabonds
by
Eluhusa Osunde. And this would be by Akwaeke Imizi. Maybe we should read Fresh Water with like an open eye and a very open heart. And just maybe.
Wow, I like how you're defending it already.
Like, just maybe. Because everybody's always like, oh, Fresh Water, you know, it's just not for me. It's for you. You just did not open your heart.
Fresh Water is for everybody. Just open your eyes. Nosa, what would you recommend?
The Color Purple by Alice Walker. I think that was one of the first queer books I read. And I really liked it because it was very historical, but very soft. And it felt very Nigerian in a way. I don't know how to explain it.
Just
because
they were black.
I think it's something that could happen in Nigeria. Like, you could just put that story in Lagos and it can happen normally. And you know how she had like broken English? Mm-hmm. Like, just use Pidgin and it's the same thing. Under the Dala Tree was a Chinelo Paranta. Very good read. And as for film, I feel like I should have recommended more films because I'm the filmmaker here. Well, my favorite queer film off the top of my head is it's called Girlhood by Celine Siama. And it's not an overtly queer film. I really like subtext. It's a good film. And
and for me, check out Ife by Uyaedu Igbe Etim, and also a new film, 14 Years and More. And that's all for this episode of the podcast, and thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you also tune in for our next episode, which will be in Germany, speaking with German artists and writers and cultural practitioners. So just stay here with us. Thank you. Dankeschön.
Dankeschön.
Podcast Burkhülshoff Center for Literature.
Queer Circles is a joint project between Matthew Blaise, Miriam Bettin, and Burkhülshoff Center for Literature in cooperation with Goethe Institute Nigeria. Funded by the Bundesstiftung Magnus Hirschfeld and by Fonds Soziokultur within the program Neustartkultur on behalf of the Beauftragte der Bundesregierung für Kultur und Medien.